Welcome back to the From the Sidelines podcast. We are back. Another action-packed week of high school sports in the Portland metro area. I'm Wade Evanson. Austin White is here. Andrew Dekoff, Tanner Russ, the usual suspects. And this week we'll go over some of the same things we always do. We'll start with our headlines. We'll talk about some of the stock risers. And we won't get any stock fallers in our areas. That'd be just, you know, mean. But we'll talk about kind of who's on the up and up in and around the area. And then we're going to go over Austin's bracketology in high school basketball from the Portland Tribune, kind of where people stand right now when it comes to seeding and such for the playoffs. So why don't we start with some headlines? I can start, actually, what I've kind of got going on my West Side websites. I'll start with Tualatin, who actually won a game last night, or yesterday, I guess, against Benson at the MLK Classic. But last Friday, got a big win over Lincoln in overtime. And, you know, for teams or for people who like to watch games with teams that maybe they're at the end. I mean, these are two teams that could be there at the end. And I was not at the game, but it was a great, great basketball game from what I understand, and came down to the wire, and Tualatin pulled it out at the end. And I'll get into them a little bit more later when I talk about my stock risers, because they've got a couple guys in their team that are really kind of stepping things up of late. I've also got a feature in the Beaverton Valley Times on Jesuit volleyball player Isabel Patterson, who was recently voted the Player of the Year in the 6A. And I talked to her last week, and I think a pretty interesting article on a pretty interesting person who is really, really into volleyball. She's going to the University of Oregon next fall, play for the Ducks, and she'll be playing both indoor and beach, which I talked a little bit about the beach volleyball scene at the college level in that piece, which is something that I didn't know a lot about until recent years, but it's kind of a growing thing amongst the NCAA sports and something that she's pretty excited to play, which she's already playing and has been playing it for a number of years at the club level, but she'll be playing both indoor and out at University of Oregon. So that's an interesting story, I think. I also have a feature on Banks's Davon Vereen, who was a defensive lineman for the Banks football team. It's also a second place finisher in last year's state wrestling championships at the 4A level. Banks at the 3A level this year, and he is, I think, 18-1, or he was at the end of last week or prior to last weekend's events, but 18-1 with his only loss coming as the result of a forfeit at the Liberty Invitational, which, from what I understand, was rather controversial and something that he and his coach are still pretty upset about, but only because he wanted to go undefeated this year. He still considers himself to be undefeated, but technically he had one loss. So I've got a feature on him and kind of how he goes about things, which I think is pretty interesting because he talks about, you know, he's just a hard worker. He's a guy who, from the time he was a young kid, said that, you know, he wanted to work. He likes to work, whether he's cleaning his room or lifting weights or running laps, whatever. He's a guy who thinks, believes, and applies hard work as kind of the key to his success. So you can catch that on the Forest Grove News Times website. And then also I caught a boys basketball game last week. Actually, I caught a girls game with Sherwood and Forest Grove, which is actually a pretty good basketball game. You can catch that in the Forest Grove New Times site as well, or the Sherwood Gazette, or the Valley Times website. But also I saw Mountainside versus Beaverton Boys, which was actually a really interesting basketball game, I think is the best way to put it, just because I didn't expect a whole lot from Mountainside in this game, especially when I found out, you know, arguably their second or third best player had injured his ankle or foot and was out for the year. So without Quinn Havenman is his name, he's done for the year. So having known that, and with Beaverton kind of, you know, getting into a bit of a groove, I thought that game might be lopsided on Beaverton's end, but actually it turned out to be Mountainside who won the game and won it by the 9 or 10 points, if I recall, and really dominated the game. I mean, it wasn't as if they you know, bumped them, but they with Braden Bowe kind of running things from the point guard position. He'd have 25 points, I think, 24 or 25 points, but he really just controlled the game you know, it was fairly close, but between him and their defense, you know, they opened some eyes in regards to what they're maybe capable of going forward. I still don't know whether they have enough firepower to kind of be there at the end, but I'll tell you what, they can give a lot of people problems. And I think Beaverton saw that firsthand last week. So those are my headlines. Austin, do you want to talk about what's going on down in the Portland area?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I said this last week, but kind of got delayed, but it's up now. The story on Benson boys basketball, they're kind of 1-2 punch between Kayvon Bradford and Dylan Duong Prachan. Got it right this time. Thanks, Andy. just kind of what they bring to Benson. You know, they've this 1-2 punch. They're able to play in their natural positions of being guards instead of playing the 4 and 5 like they had to last year because they were the tallest kids on their team. So Benson's off to a pretty good start too as well in the PIL. They're 3-1 in league play. So you can read about that. Another story I got coming down is about Cleveland girls, specifically about the Wei Wei Oli family. Their dad, Poe, is the head coach, and his two daughters are on the team. Kind of dips into, obviously, how Cleveland's doing in the PIL, and they might be the third best team behind Benson and Jefferson. But also, I chatted with them kind of about their Hawaiian roots. One of the daughters was wearing a shirt pregame against Lincoln. Just kind of trying to bring some light to some of the things that have happened to the Native folks in Hawaii. So kind of an interesting piece there, kind of their background, their blood, and you know what they kind of stand for, that family. And then another piece that I will have this week, I believe, is let's see what drawing a blank here, but there will be another preps thing. I figure my things out on the daily, so I'm not always that well prepared when it comes to the preps, but there will be another story out there. So keep it checked out on the Portland Tribune. We'll have some more preps coverage for you there.
Tanner, you want to get into what you got going on a little south of here?
Yeah, buddy. So I, a couple weeks ago now, but I just recently put it up on the Canby Herald website, got to talk to the Canby dance coach about her dance team performing at halftime of the Portland Trailblazers Detroit Pistons game, kind of what that experience was like, and how it prepared them for the championships that are coming up here in a couple weeks, and then how that further prepared them for the state championships. There's like a distinction there that are going to happen in March, I believe. And just talked about like what the experience was, getting to chat with, you know, some of the Blazers dancers before their performance, one of whom is the dance coach up at Nelson High School, I believe, up in Clackamas. Sounded like a cool experience for them. I also have a story up on the Malala Pioneer website, kind of talking to the Malala girls basketball coach, Whitney Warren, about you know, her first year as a full-time head coach. She had been the JV coach up at Gladstone for the last 3 years, and kind of getting to you know, what her philosophy is on like what she wants the team to be and like what she's looking to do. And you know, they beat a pretty good Staten team. Malala kind of humming along at 8-3 right now. They start league play against her old team Gladstone this week. So you know, go and check that one out. And if you're in the area, that team versus Gladstone should be a good game. Like Austin, I also have other things going up on the daily, so they will be there. Go check out the Woodburn, Newburgh, Malala, Canby, and other websites as well. But yeah, those are the two things that stick out in my mind right now. So those are my headlines.
Andy, what's going on Lake Oswego, Westland / Clackamas area?
All right. So in my neck of the woods, big headline for me this week is a feature story I did on the Portland Waldorf High School basketball team. This kind of headlined our small school report, where we got into some of the other basketball races going on around the state. But I really enjoyed working up this feature on the small school, the 1A Portland Waldorf team. They spent over 1,000 days not playing games during the pandemic. They missed the 2021 kind of short spring season. I think a lot of teams missed that year, or, you know, kind of had weird years there. But they also missed the 21-22 season, which fewer schools did. So now that they're back out there, I caught up with them and their coach and the three seniors who played on the last team, who were taking the court back in 2019-20, and kind of caught up with them and what the past 2 years have been like for them, and kind of getting back out onto the court, what it all means to them, and kind of how the program is actually like coming out of this long pause, and they're on track to make the playoffs right now. I mean, I think we're going to talk about this in our bracketology in a little bit here. But yeah, I mean, Portland Waldorf could end up snapping a playoff drought that goes back to 2007 in the same season after they, you know, missed two consecutive years. So pretty cool little story out there. Super interesting kids, you know, talking to these seniors, Leo Renzema, Ezra Cohen, and Roman Cole. Just really, you know, smart, bright kids, but who had some pretty good insights on what the last couple of years have been like for them. I mean, they even last year they played in a rec league because they couldn't get on the court for OSAA games. It's just been a wild last couple of years. So to see them kind of coming back and really not just showing up and losing every game or something like that this season, but showing up and, you know, they've got a winning record. They're one of the top four teams in the Valley 10, angling for a playoff spot. Pretty cool story out there. So that's up on our Clackamas Review website, Portland Tribune website, a bunch of our different sites because of some of the other small school notes in there. So take a look at the small school report and learn about the Portland Waldorf team. Other than that, our guy Shane Hoffman wrote up a nice feature on Lake Oswego basketball star Winners Grady, who came into last week as the state's leading scorer. I'd have to look at the numbers again. I'm not sure if he's still there, but kind of looking, Shane's feature on Winners kind of looks at how he's trying to become more than just a scorer. You know, I think that's the thing that stands out. If you've ever watched Winners Grady play, the guy is an offensive powerhouse. But sometimes you can kind of see the Lake Oswego team get a little one-dimensional with Winners taking the ball up, shooting it. So he's kind of trying to develop a little bit more of a playmaking distribution aspect to his game. So Shane did a nice feature on Winners Grady and kind of trying to round out his game a little bit more to become, you know, even more effective. I mean, he's already one of the top recruits in the state, regardless of class. So, you know, rounding out his game would be make him even more dangerous. Other than that, we've got a few other small headlines up there. We had three local nominees from my coverage zone for the McDonald's All-American game. So on the boys' side, that was Jackson Shellstad from West Lynn. And on the girls' side, Keely O'Halloran and Ryan Mogul. Keely O'Halloran from Lake Ridge, Ryan Mogul from Clackamas. So we'll see, I believe, the 24th of this month. So a week from today is when they make the announcements on who actually makes it to the game. I might have the date wrong on that. But the announcements will be made at some point soon. But even just to be nominated for the McDonald's All-American game is really cool. So congratulations to those three there. And we've also got West Lynn's Destiny Rodriguez. She is one of the top, you know, one of the top wrestlers in the state on the girls' side, and probably the top wrestler in the state on the girls' side. I think it's pretty easy to say that. That was backed up by USA Wrestling, who released their national rankings on earlier this month. We've got Destiny Rodriguez number one in the country at 164 pounds, number three in the country pound for pound. So that's also pretty cool. She's undefeated so far this year. I believe she's wrestling in Dallas this weekend. Dallas, Oregon, not Dallas, Texas. And, you know, can add on to her undefeated streak to start the year. So congrats to her. And did a couple other check-ins with, like, the West Lynn girls basketball team, the Oregon City boys basketball team. We are promoting a feature from OSA Today about Wilsonville swimmer Helena Jones, who set state records at the state meet last year. So just kind of a lot of stuff going on, a lot of little hitters, but those features on the Portland Waldorf team and Winners Grady are probably the big headlines to look for this week.
Well, do we want to get into our stock risers, or am I missing something here? Let's talk about it. I know that, you know, with every passing week, teams are getting better. Players getting better. people are kicking butt in the mat, kicking butt in the pool. Well, let's talk about who's doing what in your area. I know I was pretty basketball centric this week, but I have some wrestling people I was going to mention in regards to stock risers. I had three people really in general, and not necessarily players, but teams as well. I'm going to start with Josiah Lake at Tualatin. You know, he was a good player last year for the Timberwolves, and this year it's just gotten better. And as the season's gone on, I mean, he's just gotten progressively better. This whole team is kind of figuring out who they are now as a team, even though a lot of these guys came back from last year. Some of them didn't play a whole lot, and they're getting that time now. So Josiah Lake, I think as I was looking through, he scored 31 versus Lincoln in their overtime win. And prior to yesterday, where he scored 19, I think, against Benson, he'd scored 30-plus in four of his last six games and had, averaging 25.2 points a game. You know, who's kind of just doing it and getting by right now without their star player, Ava Hayden, who is out for at least, I think, another 3 weeks. And as I was looking that up, that's going to take her, you know, best case scenario, I think, takes her up to about the last four games of the league slate. And, you know, sure was 2-0 to start the league play. You know, they lost four in a row to end the holiday season. But, you know, those are tournament games, and, you know, those are games against maybe somewhat arguably tougher competition, especially without your star player. But I watched them beat Forest Grove last week, and then they went on to beat Liberty, I believe. You know, and talking to their coach, Jeff Anderson, who's in his first year at Sherwood after taking over for Lauren Howard, I believe, last year. You know, he's a real excitable guy, interesting guy to talk to. I talked to him for the first time last week, and he's excited about his team and kind of what they're doing. And you know, they had a discussion, you know, prior to their game against Forest Grove, when they found out, I guess it was two Fridays ago when Ava Hayden re-injured her ankle. So, you know, the Forest Grove game was the first game that they had to kind of check themselves and say, hey, here's what it is. This is what we've got. You know, we've got a month now without her, a month more without her. And if we're planning to do anything this year, we need to win games between now and when she comes back and get ourselves into the playoffs. And he's hoping that when Ava is ready to come back, she'll kind of seamlessly fit right into that team and that program. So props to them. I really want to just kind of give props to them and say their stock is a little on the rise just due to the fact that they're kind of learning to do things without their best player. And they did it, at least in their first two games. So they're my second stock riser. And my last stock riser, full disclosure, I'm not going to have a lot of specifics on. Just because I had planned to kind of go back and get some details on what they had been doing. But as I go through the wrestling results kind of every week and see who's doing what, the Hill High girls wrestling team is really kind of working their way towards the top when it comes to the state competition in the girls ranks. You know, they've been good for a number of years now. And I think last year they might have finished, I'm going to say top five, I want to say, but maybe even top three. Forest Grove girls won the state wrestling championship on the girls side last year, but Hillsborough is always up there. And this year they look pretty formidable. They've won at least. See, this is where the details are going to be fuzzy for me, so I probably shouldn't even say anything, and I'm not. So Hill High girls wrestling they're on the rise. And actually, I think I'm going to try to reach out to them this week and see if I can do a feature on them and kind of how things are going for them. So there you have it, Josiah Lake, Sherwood girls basketball team, and the Hill High girls wrestling team, three people/teams that out here, I believe, are on the rise. Austin, you ready to roll?
I'm ready to roll. Yeah, so I'm rolling. the first big stock riser I got came Monday night from the MLK showcase. I got a chance to see Gresham for the first time, Gresham boys basketball. And really, you know, I've heard about Isaiah Pipple-White and whatnot, and, you know, he played great, but really I was impressed with kind of his counterpart, Scotty Riddle. You know, Scotty was making all kinds of plays, you know, driving to the rim and, you know, hitting down threes, you know, especially in the fourth quarter. They were playing Roosevelt, you know, another top-ranked team. You know, Gresham's pretty high up there as well. It was a good matchup, and, you know, Scotty came up big. You know, Isaiah didn't really have a huge scoring night. Really, no one for Gresham had a huge scoring night, but Scotty was there just kind of hitting the shots when the Gophers needed it. You know, Roosevelt continued to make runs. You know, they tied it at 46 in the fourth quarter, and, you know, Scotty hit a big three to kind of provide some separation and ultimately get the win. So You know, Scotty was great. You know, I talked with their coach, Corey Lockhart, after the game, and he said he's just a great senior presence. You know, he talked about, you know, he's got, Scotty has this, I talked to Scotty as well, he's got this very low tone voice that kind of just permeates throughout the team, he said, during practice, and he's just kind of a calming presence to everybody on that Gresham team. So Scotty Riddle, you know, he's playing great. He looked great last night. Another one, you know, I mentioned in the headlines, but I'll mention them here as well, as the Cleveland girls, and specifically Addie Huss, their guard. You know, I wrote a little bit about her last year, but you know, watching her again, I believe she's a junior this year. Yeah, she's a junior this year. You know, I wrote about her last year, how, you know, she's this kind of hustle player, does a little bit of everything. And really, she's still doing that, but now she's just doing it at a higher level. I watched them play Lincoln last week, and, you know, Addie was kind of all over the place. You know, I don't remember her stats specifically, but, you know, she was knocking down threes just kind of in transition, you know, just a couple dribbles, bam, you know, finding teammates down low on some set plays. Addie's great. You know, she's probably one of the best guards in the PIL. She's a lot of fun to watch and really helps that Cleveland team kind of take them to the next level. You know, you look at Cleveland's record, they're, it's not the most impressive record, but Cleveland's played a lot of these top teams, you know, haven't really been able to get a win, but they've had that experience now, and Addie specifically has had that experience and kind of see where she can continue to grow and, you know, continue to raise her stock to talk about the segment. So those are the big two for me, Scotty Riddle, Addie Huss, big weeks from them, and looking forward to see what else they do the rest of the season.
Tanner, what's going on out there? Who's rising?
Oh, who isn't? I'll start with the, I keep going back to him because it's like, it's impressive what they're doing, but Woodburn boys basketball team, absolutely smoked Dallas on Monday, January 16th, put up 92 points, and did most of that work in the third quarter, by the third quarter. Just looking like a well-oiled machine, and they're two games ahead of the next closest person in their conference title chase. Last night they were led by sophomore guard Cruz Valiz. I believe he had 19 points, if that's what I'll have to double check the box score, but 19. Spencer Carsboom also like doing well. Liam Slatham, their West Salem transfer, continues to be a beast in the paint. It's their title to lose at this point. Like, they've got a couple more winnable games against Lebanon and South Albany coming up. And then they face a pretty solid test in Central. But, you know, they're ranked in the top five in the state. They're head and shoulders above the Mid-Willamette Conference right now. You know, barring injury, knock on wood, I think, Woodburn continues to be that team. Other stock risers, you know, Jervis girls basketball, their stock is always up there because they're really good for the 2A classification. And they're in a conference with just absolute killers. Five teams in the Tri-River Conference are ranked in the top 10. But they are currently 5-0 in league. And they are, let's see, I guess two games ahead of the next closest team. And they have a really good chance, I believe, tonight. When did they play next? They have a really good chance of beating Salem Academy. Tonight at 5:30. I heard from a reporter down here in the Willamette Valley, Jeremy McDonald, that Salem Academy is going into tonight's game down two of their crucial pieces. So this is like a big opportunity for Jervis to kind of like sweep in there and take that number one ranking at 2A from a really good Salem Academy team. So I will keep an eye on that. Other stock rising teams. Let's see. That might be it. I don't have anything on swimming or wrestling yet, but I'm going to focus in on those sports in the coming week. But Woodburn boys, Jervis girls looking really, really good midway through the season, and kind of as as playoffs are starting to loom on the horizon. So I'm going to go with those two for the week.
Andy, you got some stock risers out there?
I do, yeah. So I'm gonna go with a wrestling theme here. So a couple that are standing out to me, just looking over the weekend's results. Keegan Lopez of Clackamas had a really good meet at the Oregon Classic High School Boys Duels out in Redmond. Clackamas ended up taking sixth place in the duels tournament in the 6A bracket. And Keegan Lopez won, I believe, all but one of his matches while he was out there. I mean, nobody beat Newberg when Clackamas and Newberg faced off. That was a 76-0 shutout for the Tigers. So Tanner's got a powerhouse out there in Newberg. But other than that, Keegan Lopez picked up, I believe it was 5 wins. Got one over Tualatin, one over Lucas Gray of West Lynn, one against McNary, one against Lincoln. So 4. Pretty solid day, though. He was probably the most consistent winner for Clackamas throughout the Oregon Classic. So just a good job to him there. I know some of the guys like Jeremiah Walksmith and Jacob Larson down in the lower weight classes might get a little bit more love or publicity. They've got a little bit more, I guess, better results in the past kind of a deal. But Keegan Lopez really stepping up here. And let's see if I can pull up his record. I'll pull up his record in a moment. While I do that, I'm going to highlight another wrestler who had a great weekend, which is Vanel Imbe from the Wilsonville girls wrestling team. So Vanel actually competed in 2 meets, the Forest Grove girls tournament on Friday and then the Southridge invite on Saturday. She won the Forest Grove girls tournament, 130-pound bracket, and then took second to St. Helens' Callie Kester at Southridge invite the next day. So really nice weekend for Vanel, who had a bye in the dual meet against Hood River Valley in the middle of the week. Once she did get out there on the mat, made the most of it, though, picking up a bunch, I think 3 wins in Forest Grove and another 3 at Southridge. So just a really solid season for her as well this year. See, I believe she's now 14-3 after the Southridge tournament. Just having a really, really nice senior year and looking to make it to state for Wilsonville out there. Third wrestler I wanted to shout out was Lake Oswego's Luciano Lopez. He also had a really good week. He was one of the few to win his bout in the Three Rivers League duel against Tualatin in the middle of the week, and then he went and took second in the boys version of the Southridge tournament. So Lake Oswego hasn't had a ton to celebrate this year on the mats, but that was a really nice standout performance, in 2 different venues for Luciano Lopez there. So just wanted to go ahead and give a shout out to a very solid week for him there. And yeah, I mean, those are my big stock risers, I guess, from the wrestling scene would be Clackamas' Keegan Lopez, Lake Oswego's Luciano Lopez. Is that right? Did I get 2 guys with the same last name? That was not planned. And then Vanel Imbe from the Wilsonville girls team.
All right. Well, now that we've gotten over the fact that Andy is discriminating against everybody not named Lopez,
you can change your name. You can go down to City Hall. It's not that expensive.
Hey, everybody else out there, you've got a chance. Just keep working, keep fighting, keep playing hard. And, some point Andy will get over your name not being Lopez and he'll throw you in there. All kidding aside, I think it is key to note that, we've talked about swimming and wrestling. We don't talk about that a lot in this pod. And just from my perspective, it's not that we're disinterested. It's just the fact that it's just tough. The regular season when it comes to wrestling and swimming is pretty difficult to track. Wrestling is a little easier than the swimming, but I know I went to a Forest Grove swimming meet last week against Newburgh and just took some pictures. And it's tough swimming. The results aren't really out there. They've got that swimming app. I don't know if you guys have used that swimming app at all, but I tried to look some stuff up here recently, and there's really nobody using it, or at least none of my schools are using it. I think when it comes to the big meets, the district meets, the state meets, they use it, and you can get really real-time results. But without that, or really any way of getting real-time results, it's tough in the regular season swimming. There are standouts out there. I know in my area, Jesuit Sunset, these are schools that take their swimming seriously and are, their results show it out. But until we get to the district meets and then ultimately state, it's tough to really talk a lot about it, I think. But by no fault of the kids, but wrestling is a little easier. And again, those things are coming down the pipe. So the district meets are fast approaching. And I think we'll get more into what's happening on the mat and in the pool then. But fear not, people. We are at least keeping an eye on some of that stuff. With that being said, let's talk more basketball. we're going to go through the Austin does a bracketology. You do it every week? How often do you do that?
Yeah, since we're still in January, I kind of try to do it once a week, just because when I do it, it probably takes me like an hour and a half, 2 hours, because there's all kinds of specific rules and whatnot for who qualifies. Leagues do auto bids, and there's all kinds of things to figure out. Not so much math, it's just kind of tedious work. So I try to do it once a week. But once we get closer, probably once the calendar flips to February, I'll probably do it maybe a couple times a week, just as the end gets near and we want to see who's in a position to make it, who's on the bubble, that kind of fun deal.
Well, it's pretty interesting. If anybody wants to know kind of where things stand somewhat real time. So Austin put this together, I think, was it yesterday?
Yeah, Monday.
So yesterday put this together, and that's all based on where the OSAA rankings stand, at least at the point of him looking it over. So, and then obviously using, leagues, the auto bids, every league has X amount of auto bids, I believe three. And on top of that, you'll have at-large bids based on the rankings for the most part. But we can go through, I know I kind of, it's an interesting read. So if you're interested in where people stand in high school basketball, boys and girls, go to the Portland Tribune and you can check this out. Actually, I think you can find that on all of our websites. Is that right?
It's just on the Tribune, but it's been shared to every site on social media. So if you follow any of our papers, it's there.
Well, how do we want to do this? Do we want to talk about, is anybody itching to talk about something that jumped out at them? I know that as I went through my leagues, there are some interesting results in regards to maybe who you thought would be sitting in that position right now and who is, or in some cases, who's not. Does anybody want to start on this, or do you guys want me to kind of dig in?
I could share a little, just kind of, obviously doing it every week and seeing this. Specifically at 6A on the boys, some that stood out to me and always has, because, I do these things I've done these kind of prediction things for football, both falls. I did it last spring for baseball and softball. I did it last year for basketball. And just kind of things I've noticed, and it's happening again, too. There is a lot of emphasis that happens on winning, but it's kind of interesting how much it really does kind of play in who you play. Like, specifically, I'm looking at the boys. You look at Clackamas, and we've talked about them on here before. I think they still only have one loss, maybe two. But right now, they're still at the four seed, right? And then you look at a team that's in the same conference as them, Sandy, who I believe also only has one loss, and Sandy is the 17 seed. It's just kind of it's interesting to see how much variation there is in OSA rankings. I would say Clackamas and Sandy have played a pretty similar schedule, yet you got a seed difference of 13 between them, and they're in the same league. So I think just an overall interesting thing to look at this is how much the OSA rankings really does play a part in this, and how I don't want to dog on the OSA too much, but how inconsistent it can be sometimes. I think that kind of leads to what the interesting parts, way that you touched on, that I'm sure you will touch on, teams being in places unexpectedly in a I think that's a big reason why, you know, there's winning and there's beating good teams, and you would think maybe beating more good teams might lend itself to a better rank, but, you know, not always the case. You know, another quick example I can think of too is, you know, Wilsonville girls. They're winning their league, but right, they were the 12th seed, but Andy's touched on it before. They played an extremely tough schedule. You would think that maybe that would be rewarded a little bit, but not really. You know, they're sitting at that 500 record and they're down at 14. I think Tanner just numbered to me. So yeah, it's interesting to see just kind of how it plays out and how difficult it can be sometimes to rise if you have a few losses on your docket.
Well, I think, and I like the idea that I think in a lot of ways, the way the OSAA rankings tend to work is they do reward a good loss almost more than they reward a bad win. So like if you beat up on some team that is just simply not good, they don't weigh that much. At least it seems that way. Whereas if you lose to a really good team, I feel like that helps you. I mean, I know even in the football rankings, I used to always marvel at how, you know, I think it wasn't this past season, but 2 years ago when Tiger won like three games, like during the regular season, but they were like in the top 24, I think, in like the playoff rank in the OSA rankings, because, you know, they're playing essentially in their league. I think they had four teams make the quarterfinals. So, you know, they're playing a murderer's row of a schedule. Whereas if you play, you know, sorry, Pacific Conference, but if you play in the Pacific Conference, like a team like Sherwood in years past, which has kind of run roughshod over that conference, you know, you might be 17-2, but if 12 of your wins came against weaker competition, where should you be ranked? Should you be in the top five, or should you maybe be somewhere, you know, 12-14? I feel like there's always ones that slip through the cracks, but like, as I look through these right now, just looking through the field, there are a couple teams that are interestingly ranked. I've never seen Clackamas play, but I know there's been some smirks in regards to when their record is brought up. So maybe they're really good. Maybe they're not. I don't know. But number four feels a little high for them. You know, when I look at a team like Tigard, who, as I look through that, I think was ranked somewhere around 17th or something like 19th,
yeah,
which feels really low to me. Like, I think Tigard is probably a top 12 team in the state. So 19 feels a little low, but that must indicate that their schedule has not been all that difficult. So I don't know. I feel like the rankings have in the past had a way of kind of working out pretty well, but I do think when they went back to the automatic bids, like if you go to the automatic bids right now, like I was looking through my league. So the Metro League, you've got Southridge, Jesuit, and Mountainside, or automatic bids, at least Beaverton having to play their way into the state tournament or state playoffs, which, you know, they've lost some games, but they've won some games too. And in this particular interest, now these are going to play out, right? All these are going to play out. They're just starting the league schedules. I think they're like two games in. So in the Metro League, Southridge, which is having a great season so far, but they'll be the first to tell you, their coach Phil Vessel will be the first to tell you they have not played a difficult schedule. So, you know, the likelihood of them being in the top three and Beaverton not being in the top three at the end of the season, probably not great, but, you know, maybe. I mean, Mountainside already beat Beaverton, you know, Jesuits going to be up there, Southridge, you know, maybe I saw them play. They're a good basketball team. How good is yet to be determined, I think, but who knows, maybe Beaverton is on the outside looking in and goes in as an at-large. You know, right now, what's their seed right now? Like, aren't they? They're still in the top.
Oh yeah, they're five.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
that's nuts. You know, and if I look at the Pacific Conference, Sherwood, Century, Liberty are the two auto bids, or three, excuse me, three auto bids. Gosh, I don't. Awesome. Awesome for them,
right?
And but Forest Grove is getting is still in as an at large, and a Forest Grove is under 500. You know, so they, if you look at their schedule, they must have played a difficult schedule to still be in that at large situation despite being under 500. So it is interesting to go through this now. I do think it'll be far different in about 3 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
Because you'll be more than halfway through the league schedule, and you'll have a better idea as to like who's in those auto bid situations. But that, yeah. It's interesting, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's early too. You know, it's important to kind of keep that context in there when you look at it as well, that it's early. You know, don't want to dig too much on Century Boys, but you know they are in there because I think they might be like 1-0 or 1-1 in league play, because I mean it's very early. So technically, you know, they are sitting in second, but it's like, you know, you play another week of league, they might not be in second anymore. And
they're playing Liberty tonight. That probably would be a pretty good basketball game.
Yeah.
You know, and I hate to keep doing this, but it's just the facts. You know, that league is just not very strong. So, you know, there's going to be three teams come out of that league that get auto bids, which if there ever was an argument against auto bids, which I'm not saying I am or am not, that would be an argument against it. The fact that three teams out of that league are going to get our guaranteed spots in the state playoffs when, from a ranking standpoint, I mean, Century is 44th in the OSA rankings right now. They have three teams that ranked 44 or higher in that league, 44, 46, and 45. And then they have a 39. So, you know, that's pretty, I mean, an interesting study would be to go through and come up with the total ranking of the entire leagues, and see how that plays out.
Because I assure you,
what's that?
It wouldn't look good for some of these leagues.
Well, as I'm just scanning it right now, the Pacific Conference would be arguably the highest, with a close second maybe being PIL.
Probably.
Yeah. And actually the PAL, well, some of these leagues have more teams, right? So you have to come up with an average number. So if you total them all up and then came up with an average ranking per league, it'd be the most. But I mean, the Pacific Conference and the PAL appear to be the two weakest conferences based strictly on the rankings at this point.
Boys and girls too. It's on both sides of the sport. Like the highest ranked Pacific Conference girls team is 16. That's Sherwood. And then the lowest is Glencoe at 41. So, I mean, like, you know, if you're just doing like a 16 team bracket, only Sherwood's making it in. And then, you know.
Well, and the shame of that is Sherwood, where are they in reality? Because, right, you know, they played a handful of games at the early part of the year with their, you know, with a top five player in the state. And then they haven't had that person since. So where are they now? Now, you know, they're still a decent basketball team. Like I watched them play, like they have some good players, but you could argue that they're not even ranked. I mean, they're not that maybe even that high with the way their roster is composed right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm glad you brought up Sherwood, because it's kind of one of the other fun things that I like to see in this, because, you know, there's always going to be teams that probably fall a little farther than you expect because of an injury or slow start, tough schedule, whatever the case may be. And Sherwood's one of them. You know, Sherwood, look at it right now in the projections from yesterday, they're sitting at 14. They win a first round game. They're playing Beaverton in the second round. And, you know, if they have Ava Hyden, that game becomes extremely more difficult for Beaverton, you know, the defending champs, in a second round game where, you know, some of the other top seeds probably aren't playing someone as formidable. So it's kind of interesting to see, you know, where some of these second round matches might end up. You know, it kind of happened last year. Benson girls, let's see, I think they ended up as the 7 seed and Jefferson was the 10 seed, you know, a league rival. So they ended up having to play in the second round, and Benson was one mistake away from losing that game to Jefferson. And then Benson went on to take fourth place at the Child Center. So yeah, I specifically looking at 6A with, you know, 32 teams, it can create some kind of interesting second round matchups when you get some of those teams that either just underperform for a little bit or have someone hurt. It just makes for kind of an interesting projection. You know, some to chat about, some for us on the podcast to chat about.
Projection. Well, staying with Sherwood, I mean, just real quick, I'm looking at that, and as you bring up the point of them potentially as it sits right now, playing a team like Beaverton in the second round, it would almost behoove them to drop to like 23 or 24 because they're still playing a team in the first round who they can beat with Ava Hyden. And then in the second round, that means they'd be playing a team who would be like more like a 5, 6, or 7.
It's interesting because last year, I mean, that's kind of where, you know, I touched on the Cleveland girls. That's kind of where they fell in last year, I believe. I think they're in that 20-some range. And they played Mountainside the first round and upset them. And then Cleveland was a buzzer beater away from beating West Lynn, I think, who was either the 8 or 7 seed or something like that. You know, so there can, it can be a path if you maybe fall more into the 20s instead of getting to that 14 to 19 range, because, you know, you win that first round game, you're getting either a 1 seed, 2 seed, 3 seed, you know, one of those top teams. If you can fall more to where you're playing 5 through 8 in that second round, there might be a better path to get to the state tournament, the quarterfinals.
Well, especially if you were at one for the bulk of the season compromised, and now you're a different team with a different player, right? So, yeah, you know, just another thing, interesting thing to kind of talk about as you look through these things. Anybody else have anything to add to this? I mean, I know.
I think at the 6A level, it's interesting to see, you know, a team like Lake Oswego in the field and a team like Lake Ridge not in the field when they're, you know, Lake Oswego has a record of the boys has a record of 5 and 8, and the Lake Ridge boys have a record of 8 and 5. But they're on the outside looking in. I mean, when you look a little bit deeper into their actual results, you'll see that a few of those losses for Lake Oswego came out of state, so they don't actually apply to the rankings. And, you know, you look at who Lake Ridge has actually beat, and you realize a lot of them are in the 5A level. You know, the numbers start to make sense when you look at them deeper, but when you just kind of look at it at first glance, you're like, whoa, wait, what? How is that working? But we'll see. I mean, one thing to note, especially about the Three Rivers League boys, is they are the only league that has not started league play yet. So all of these numbers are based solely on non-league play. And the automatic bids too. So soon we will have, you know, new information that will, you know, totally change what the automatic bids look like once we start getting actual league records in there as well. The girls' side, they have started league play in the Three Rivers League. Just the boys have not. I think they're getting that going next week because they still have another week of non-league stuff going on right now. So That'll be interesting. All the other basketball leagues in the 6A have started playing, but Three Rivers League boys have not. And at the moment, it's resulting in kind of a funny looking situation for the two schools in Lake Oswego.
Well, that's why, like we talked about, it's early. This is more fodder for people like us to talk about.
Exactly.
which is why we have it. It's interesting, right?
Yeah. And it's really, you know, it's fun to do it 6A, you know, it's fun to do it for all the levels, right? But the one bad thing I'd say for 6A is, you know, we have these auto bids, but to be honest with you, it really doesn't matter because there's so many at-large spots. You know, you kind of touched on it, Wade. Beaverton is not technically right now in the 3 from the Metro League, but they're the first at-large team and they're still the 5 seed. They're still going to host two playoff games in theory if they win. When you have that many at-larges, it's just like getting the auto bid from the league is, you know, I guess secures you. But, you know, if you're a really good team, like Central Catholic, they're also not in the Mount Hood top 3, but they're the next at-large team coming off. But that's kind of where it really gets fun as well, because the 3A through 2A classifications, they all have league tournaments at the end of the year. And that's kind of where this bracketology thing can get really fun, because you know, you can see which teams finish top 3, but then they have these league tournaments, right? And you might get their 5th place team making a run. And, you know, Tanner kind of saw this firsthand last year with Oregon Episcopal girls. I think they finished 5th. Yeah. They finished 5th in the Lewis and Clark League. They played their league tournament and they won a couple games and got the 3rd auto bid. and their OSA ranking was bad because they were pretty bad throughout the year.
Got in so as the 16 seed.
Yeah, they got into the 16 seed and knocked off the one seed in the first round, and then they went down to Coos Bay and won their first game down there, I believe. And then I think, and then they lost, and they were playing in the third place game. I can't remember. Did they win that, Tanner?
They did not win their third place game. No, gotcha. Their moment was kind of like winning that that first game down there and just being like, what? I'm sorry. Like,
yeah.
Where did you come from?
The 16 seed, and really not even 16 seed. That team was lower. They were probably more in the 20s for their OSA ranking. So yeah, it kind of gets fun when you get down to the small schools, kind of what can change there in that last week of league play in February. But yeah, no, just like Wade said, something fun to talk about, see where you're at. And, you know, if you're a team on the bubble trying to get into one of these at-large spots and, you know, you're in a league that might not be winnable, there you go. You know what you need to do. Start
I do
winning a couple games.
Talking about at-large spots, like real quick, just going down to like 4A, like given the nature of their play and field, like you want to talk about like a lot of people getting a shot at the postseason. I think just the way it's structured and with the amount of teams that are at 4A, I think only like four or five teams miss the postseason at all. So like you kind of just have to like get yourself at the 26th like ranked spot in the state at 4A, and you too can have a shot at state glory. So it's only the truly bad are omitted from a chase for gold.
Yeah,
well, it's tough too, right? I don't know whether like in the three like how similar it is to like volleyball, because I know like Banks won the Coastal Range League in volleyball, but then they had to play a play-in game to get into the basically the postseason. Or like if you consider the play in a part of the postseason, like they had to play their way in, whereas the team that finished second in that league was one game from the state tournament, despite losing the league. So yeah. That's where the league, the auto bid thing is kind of weird, that you it means something to the, it means more to the teams that I guess aren't that good than it does to the teams who are going to be there anyways. It's some way healthier for a league to have a really good team not get an auto bid, because then they're getting more teams in because they're getting an extra team because their best team somehow fit in to finish in the top three, right? That would be like a Beaverton scenario where like maybe Beaverton's ranked, you know, eighth in the OSA rankings, but they finish fourth in the league, like behind those three teams, Southridge, the Mountainside, and Jesuit. And I don't know, it's kind of weird that way. That's why like I'm not a huge, I loved it when they went with the football, when they just go with the rankings. It just feels better to me, but I know a lot of coaches like the auto bids and the ADs, because that means that their kids, more of their kids get in the tournament, right? Or get in the playoffs, when they in all likelihood wouldn't be if they just went straight by the rankings.
And it's also nice to know what what you need to do to make the playoffs, right? You know, you need to finish this place in your league, and you have control over that a little bit more than you need to finish this high in the computer rankings, which look at everybody across the state, you know. So I can see that, you know, the automatic bids put a little bit more of, you know, controlling your own destiny type of situations in for teams, which, you know, can be helpful to motivate the team, put a carrot in front of them and get them to make the playoffs that way.
Mm-hmm. And it was something like last year, Woodburn football, not last season, last year in 2021, I guess, they went 6-3 and missed out on the postseason because they went like, I guess, 2-3 in their league. So just interesting. And meanwhile, like a 4-5 team that I can't remember the name of snuck in there. So
yeah, I mean, the auto bids, yeah, I mean, it can help. Yeah, it's funny because you go to the 1A level, they've changed this year. 1A last year did some kind of crazy, there's, let's see, how many, let me do my math here in my head. Yeah, there's eight leagues in 1A, And last year they did some weird thing where one league, like if you finish second, you'd play the third place team in this league, and like every league champ got a bye because I think they only had a 24 team field. I don't know. It's weird. 1A changed it. Now there's no at large in 1A. Every league gets their top four teams into the state tournament. And, you know, I honestly think it's a better deal because 1A is just so hard to do those computer rankings because there's not a lot of, there's some crossover. I mean, they play non-league games, but it's like you have these outlying teams that just don't really play each other. And there's so many teams of 1A, I never even realized. There's like, I think it goes almost to 80 on both sides. There's so many teams of 1A. So it's hard
like
to do
74,
a ranking.
I think.
Yeah, it's way up there. So it's like 1A has just completely taken the rankings out of the equation. Everyone's going to get some representation. And I think it'll be interesting this first year to kind of see what happens. You know, obviously probably the ones, you know, they still use the rankings obviously to make the seeding. So there is, they are still using it, but it'll be interesting to see if there's more blowouts, less blowouts, you know, maybe teams that were in tough leagues that didn't get in before, maybe now they're going to have a chance and be able to kind of show what they did. And you know, there's some other changes too to note. Wade kind of talking with the 3A and the Banks volleyball. That was kind of more so of what I think it was a weird change that 3A did. They changed to a 20 team tournament in volleyball, and they also are doing the same for basketball. And that Banks situation was weird. So if you win your league, you're guaranteed a home game, right? But because Banks was ranked so low, I think they were the 16 seed or whatever it may be. They didn't. So 13 through 20, there's four kind of first round games with a 20 team bracket. And Banks, because they were ranked so low, they were in that kind of initial part instead of being 1 through 12, where they had essentially a bye to the second round.
Right.
And so that setup from 3A, I think, is very odd for a situation like that, where you might have a league champ that's, they're a league champ, but they're ranked lower. Just, you know, they had a slow start to the season or something. And now they're essentially kind of getting punished because they're not ranked as high.
Well, and that's where, like, in their case, like in that situation, where the true punishment is not necessarily having to play that extra game, because that's a game that, you know, in all likelihood you're going to win. It's the fact it's the seeding situation, because mm-hmm. what happened to them was they ended up playing in that initial round, winning handily, and then they get to play in their next round against like a top three team. Which I think it was like Santee M. Christian or something. And I think they ended up losing in five sets. So like they were a team that probably should have been, they were probably one of the best eight teams in the 3A and probably should have been at the state tournament. But because they kind of got shoved to that early round situation, they got a brutal second round match, which essentially knocked them out of being in the state tournament. Whereas Corbett, who they beat in the league playoff to win the league, you know, was ended up being ranked like, I don't even remember, 10th or something. And so they get to play, you know, a seven seed or something in the first round, opposed to playing a two or three.
Yeah. No,
which is tough, right?
Weird. Yeah. Because Banks, you know, if Banks had been a 9 or 12 seed, they would have been automatically moved up to the 8th and would have been playing a home game in that round instead of playing one of those top seeds. But because they fell to a 13
and
20
a good
seed.
Team. Or a bad.
Yeah. And because
yeah,
they
weird.
Fell in
it's
that
like,
13-20 range, they got, you know, they had to play a much tougher team in the second round.
If you're going to do auto bids, then weigh the league championship as well. Like if you win the league, that should afford you something beneficial, right? You should have been like, congratulations, you won the league. Now you're a 19 seed and you're playing whoever. And there's two teams in your league that are ranked higher than you.
Yeah.
That have lesser opponents. That is something that I think that could be looked at, right? If the league championship should mean something more than finishing third in the league. Like, you're not getting anything more than the third place teams getting in your league as it's constituted right now, right? So I don't know. That would be interesting to say, hey, you win the Metro League, you're a top eight seed, or you win the Pacific Conference, you're not necessarily a top eight seed, but you're Maybe. I mean, you're something, right?
Yeah.
Maybe you're a top 16 seed.
Yeah. 6A and 1A made a change this year across all sports that if you're a league champ, because before it was you had to still be in the top 16 of the OSA rankings if you were a league champ to still get a home game in the playoffs. And now they've changed it to where if you're a league champ, you get up there no matter what. So, you know, example like Sherwood in the Pacific Conference, you know, if they win their league, they're going to at least be 16 seed, host a playoff game. And they have that for 5A through 2A as well, but they have that stipulation still of being in the top 16. So, you know, if like Wilsonville girls, for some reason, they're 14, if they fall to 17 at some point and they still win the league, they're going to get in as a lower seed and not host just because they're not in the top 16. So it seems like there's some momentum going that way, Wade. And I agree with you there that winning the league should give you some kind of reward, no matter where you're at with the ranking. That's still an accomplishment.
Well, it's an interesting conversation to have. I mean, obviously, as like I said, we beat it into the ground, but this is all going to be, it's very fluid. Yeah. And as we go through the league schedules, these are all kind of have a way of ironing themselves out. And the cream will eventually rise to the top one way or another.
Absolutely. Yeah.
What somebody steer this ship? Are we done with bracketology? Are we digging further? We haven't talked a lot about the girls, but I mean, I think we've kind of, this is kind of what we wanted to do, right? We wanted to talk about where this stands, what it means going forward and how it works, right?
Yeah, exactly. Give some folks some context to it, you know, look at it with different lens and understand it's early. And like Wade said, things will change. They've already changed from when I posted it yesterday because there was games played on Monday. So changes every day. I can't update it every day. So take what you will on Monday, you know, see your team's results. You can kind of see where they move up and down in the rankings, get kind of a gist.
Well, are we done? Is that it?
Anything grinding your gears this week, Wade?
No, there's a lot. I'm not sure. The NFL playoffs were interesting. I mean, I need to stay off Twitter. Ultimately, what I need to do is stay off Twitter because, you know, what I hate is people on Twitter. And I mean, if you're on Twitter, you get to see all the knuckleheads that run the conversation. So whether it's, you know, Justin Herbert is terrible or Kirk Cousins lost the game for Minnesota, despite like playing pretty well, really, for most of that game by Kirk Cousins standards. I mean, I was waiting for that guy to implode the whole game, and he really didn't do it. And just because he happened to throw one short of the stakes on the final play of the game, because he had a guy like literally in his face, like, does it make him, you know, God knows who, right? I mean, come on. Like, so that's the kind of stuff that like irks me. Or like if you like Tom Brady, it's like, oh my God, he's got to hang it up. He had the worst game ever last night. I'm like, yeah, he didn't have a great game. But again, did you watch the game? Because he pretty much had about a second and a half to make a decision in those games. And I'm not like a big Tom Brady honk, but like people basically, it's like, Twitter is the place where everybody who hates everybody lays in the weeds until they get to hate that person. That's pretty much what it comes down to, right?
Or they might find someone new to hate, like Brett Maher, who misses four extra points yesterday, and the entire world had to get off at least one, you know, Brett Maher's not making it, you know, he's going to get fired joke somewhere in there, you know, whether that's being locked out of the facilities today or not being allowed onto the team plane or, you know, whatever it is, you know, seeing people talk about. I mean, heck, even Peyton Manning in the Manning cast or whatever was like, can you cut a guy at halftime of a playoff game? Jeez Louise.
Well, if you remember,
it brings out the worst in people.
If you remember, Peyton Manning had that infamous incident with his kicker,
Vanderjagt.
When Vanderjagt like made some comment about, I don't even remember what the comment was, but it was basically, and then Manning came back with his, well, you know, he's an idiot kicker. Like, you know, something along those lines.
Yeah.
So he doesn't have a big track record with the kickers. But no. Hey, listen, Brett Maher, whatever you want to call him. He, I rode that guy in fantasy football this league, so he was solid for me.
Okay. Good
and
thing
to be honest, I'm not a big Cowboys fan, so like I rejoiced in every miss because for the most part, they were pretty damn good last night. So it was the one thing I could laugh at.
It made me worry, though, you know, like, gosh, this is all setting up so perfectly for, you know, another Tom Brady comeback movie. It didn't go that way, which I was pretty surprised by. You know, maybe we've really reached the end of his, you know, pulling miracles out of everywhere by himself portion of his career. I'm not saying, you know, he's a terrible quarterback or anything. He's obviously, I think he had, what, the third most yards in the league this year, something like that. But, you know, he used to be able to just Superman that stuff out of his back pocket, you know.
Who didn't? I don't know if you watched that game to the end, but if like whose eyebrow didn't raise when he threw that deep ball after they covered the onside kick? They recovered the onside kick. He threw that deep ball up the sideline to Evans, and it went off his fingertips. Like if he catches that for a touchdown, I'd have been like, oh, wow, we were like two more onside kick recoveries away from having like the greatest comeback in the history of the NFL.
Oh, as soon as they scored their first touchdown, I was like, okay, it's over. You know, Tampa Bay is going to come back and win this thing. Yeah, I think, and that speaks to you know, Tom Brady's influence on football spectators, I think, over the last 20 years. You know, just you see one play happen and you're like, oh my God, it's coming. You know, that's a pretty good testament to the guy.
Well,
yeah,
I'm not
a big Brady fan.
I still think, because he was bad, like he was bad last night. But again, you have to look at the circumstances, right? Like he still throws the ball pretty well when he has time. And I think if you gave that, I will still say if you put that guy on a reasonable team next year, which won't be Tampa Bay, I'd bet if he plays, I'd bet Vegas. I just can't see Miami doing it, but maybe, who knows. But like if you put him on a good team where he has to basically lead, make good throws when he needs to, you give him some time, good running game, like he's still a top 15 or 16 quarterback in the league. Like I'd take him over half the league if you have a solid nucleus of players. But on having said that, like I watched a fair number of their games this year because they basically forced us to, and he was bad. Like he was not good. Like their team sucked. Like people who kept saying, oh, they're going to beat Dallas. I'm like, yeah, you know, it's really basically just a Tom Brady factor of like, oh, people think that, you know, because Tom Brady, you know, he can pull one out of his hat. I mean, but Dallas was far better than them going into that game. And you saw it last night. I mean, it was lopsided. I mean, you saw Tampa Bay for what they are. They're bad. Like they're a bad team.
I mean, they came into the game with a losing record.
So. Right. Like I've got.
But they got to host because they won their conference.
Yeah.
Take it back.
Right. Which is stupid. Even stupid at the NFL level, right?
Yeah.
Well, the good news is I suckered. I didn't say sucker, but I've got a couple of good friends that are huge Cowboy fans. They're the obnoxious ones, and. They always put me on like a text thread during every game. It's them two and me. And I'm like, why you guys put me on this? I don't care. Like have your little fanboy discussions. You guys can make love to each other and the team without me present. Like I don't need to watch. But I did sucker them into because they were riding a high last night. So my buddy's like $20. I bet you $20. They'd be in San Francisco next week. I'm like straight up. He's like, yeah. I'm like done. Like you're on. You're on.
So what I was gonna ask if you got them to. Did you get them to bet that 45.5 point over?
No.
Because you should have. Because Brett Maher missed four extra points, and that score was 45 points even.
What was the final score of that game? 31 to 15.
31 to 14. Like? And the over under was set at 45.5.
Oh no.
Well, there was a point. There was a point where, because one of my friends took Dallas to win by 22 or more points, and since I'm not mentioning he for $100, well, you know what the odds are? Odds you're getting for winning by 22.5, they were big, and I think it was like 5 minutes to go, like 3 minutes to go in the game. I think he's winning that bet.
Mm-hmm.
But he also took them to win by more than 6 and by more than 12, like three separate bets. So he still came out nicely up, but had he won that 22 plus one, he didn't tell me what the odds were, but I should look it up. I'm guessing they were pretty high.
Yeesh.
Damn.
Anyways, this has been From the Sidelines podcast.
Yeah, where we talk about prep sports in the winter. Not pro football.
we talk about a little everything. That's the beauty. I mean, come on, we talk about the things that piss me off.
Right.
I mean, I could sit here all day and talk about things that make me mad.
Yeah, we got lucky that it had to do with sports. I mean,
true. All right, let's call quits then. That is another episode of From the Sidelines, and next week we will be back and we'll be talking more prep sports. So enjoy the action. 3, 2, 1.